What up? We are back with another great episode for you guys. We're going to be going over the draft recap that went down this weekend. What a great, great time it was downtown Detroit for the city. There was a sea of people. I think the count for all 3 days was 775,000 people were down there for all 3 days of the draft. I think that was an all-time attendance record. I think Thursday night one, I think it was 275,000 just for night one. I mean, the overhead shots were absolutely incredible. I could not have imagined being down there and being inside that sea of people. That would have been way too crowded for me. I don't know how anybody went to the bathroom, but it looked like an absolute blast.
You just urinated on yourself. That's what you do.
That's what I would assume. That are just pissing your beer can.
And did you guys hear, like, for the Taylor Swift concert, like, adult women wore diapers so they wouldn't have to leave, and they just pissed and shit on themselves so they didn't miss any of Taylor Swift? Probably what a lot of people did downtown. They just pissed and shit on themselves. They wouldn't miss any action. I also heard that, which the battle between Lafayette, Coney Island, and Senate Coney Island, I don't know where you guys fall, but I've always been a Lafayette, Coney Island guy. They said they sold over 10,000 hot dogs in those 3 days, which is blows their normal record away for what they do. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, Nashville had 600,000, which had blown everybody else away, you know, with attendance for the draft. But then we manned up and said, you know, Nashville, hold our beer, because we put another 175,000. Can you imagine that? And that small area where they had the draft set, I would be so claustrophobic. I'd have an anxiety attack. I would probably piss and shit myself just because how packed it was. Yeah, it was awesome. And you know me, I was excited for this draft. I know we had a lot of conversation in our group chat about it.
You know, we showed out and we balled out for the draft. So hopefully that means we'll have a Super Bowl coming back our way here pretty soon down the line. Not just to hang a banner up, but actually bring the Super Bowl to Detroit for the game.
Let's do it the year in Detroit when in Detroit. Let's pull a Tampa Bay and Tom Brady.
That'd be fantastic. But the Lions did what some of us said they were going to pick the unexpected. They ended up trading up a couple picks to take Tyron Arnold, cornerback from Alabama, with the first pick of the first round, the number 29th pick he was in the first round.
They traded up from 29 to 24.
29 to 24?
Yeah.
That's what it was. And he definitely was the best player on the board. Definitely a starter. Definitely somebody, a CB1 without a shadow of a doubt. But I was a little surprised that we went with a cornerback with our first pick. But there's no denying the fact that if he was sitting there, why the hell not? And I also seen rumors today fluttering around. I don't know what other NFC North team was trying to trade up to get him, but we were able to jump ahead and secure him in the draft, whether that's Minnesota, Chicago, or Green Bay. Dan, I don't know if you know any more on that.
It was the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers were planning on taking him where they picked Jordan Morgan, the offensive tackle. So we wouldn't have got Terry on our if we didn't trade.
No, that's Definitely happy with the pick. Definitely happy. Dan, do you got anything to say on Arnold?
So I did say if we were going to trade up, that's the one guy I would have traded up for. I didn't think we'd only have to trade up four or five spots to get him. I thought it was going to have to be in the teens. But the big difference with Tyron Arnold and the second-round pick is back when, like, Darius Slay was drafted and Jeff Okuda was drafted, when they were drafted, they were tasked with going in, being the number one guy, the guy to lead the secondary. And that's a lot of pressure. You know, Tyron Arnold and the second-round pick extra, you know, they're not going to be called upon this year as being the top corners or top secondary, you know, in the secondary. Carlton Davis is going to be our QB1 this year. We traded for him. He restructured his deal, make it a little more team-friendly, but he's got a one-year deal. So he's going to be back after 1 year. Could be one of those things was, you know, thank you for your service, but now we don't necessarily need you. We have Amik Robertson. Emmanuel Mosley was re-signed. So neither one of these guys are going to be asked to come in and be the savior of the secondary, which I think gives them a little bit of time to acclimate to the NFL, acclimate to the Lions' defensive system. And I know it'll be a little easier for Terron Arnold because he came from probably the most NFL-ready system, which was a Nick Saban Alabama system. And I do truly feel that after this next season, Carlton Davis might go away and Terron Arnold takes that spot of QB1. He gets a year to really adjust to the NFL and really adjust to just the bigger, faster, stronger, you know, wide receivers that he's going to have to guard as QB1. So I think it's different from the past where it'll be – they're going to impact, but they're not asked to do too much their rookie.
How did you like the pick, Jay Bird?
That's exactly what I wanted. That's who we needed. We needed someone good. We locked him in. Dan called it. Freaking sweet.
To piggyback what Jordan just said, it was the guy that we needed. Not only was it who Brad Holmes said was the best available player at that time on their board, it was a position of need. So you killed two birds with one stone with getting the best available player that happens to be at a need. So how we talked about last week is I don't know if I really want to take best available player if it's not a need. This trumped that because it, you know, cornerback and secondary wasn't neat. Because we went from one of the worst secondaries in the league to probably one of the best in the NFC.
You know, my favorite thing too is he's ever since he got drafted, he keeps saying that he's home, he's home, he's home, and I know one of it. I'm gonna misquote him on it. On him, but I know that he posted something that said along the lines of, I was expected to go top 15, but ended up going to the perfect situation. So I was like, this is a player that wants to be here. He's glad he's here. And I couldn't be happier that we got him. And, you know, second round, we ended up going and getting another cornerback in Enos Rekeshaw. You know, the fourth round, we ended up going with an offensive tackle, safety in the fourth round as well, a defensive tackle in the sixth, and then an offensive guard in the sixth there. Overall, I think that we did an A-plus job in drafting.
I think a theme that you could say coming out of this draft, and it's been a theme you've seen over the years with Brad Holmes' drafts, is versatility. Terron Arnold has played safety, he's played nickel, and he's played on the outside and defended the wide receiver one. Enos Rekeshaw, who I'm not necessarily a big of a fan of him as I was Terron Arnold, but he's basically C.J. Gardner-Johnson 2.0. He's probably going to be best served initially playing in the box in the nickel position, but he can tackle. He's a sure tackle, and you know, can he grow more into playing on the outside opposite of Arnold in the future? Yeah, but I think that the versatility of him, where he does play outside, but he also is a killer in the box, is going to help. Giovanni Manu, the offensive tackle from British Columbia, they had a pro day in Canada. I know they had it for the Canada colleges, but I believe they allowed some of the CFL players to come too. Don't quote me on that, because I believe Steigers, the corner from the Toronto Argonauts, was at that pro game. Don't quote me on that. But Giovanni Manu, he's like 6'8", 350, and he has no fat on his body. This guy is an athlete. He was a basketball player in high school, and they called him Baby Shaq. He has versatility to play guard and tackle. I truly believe that, you know, he's even said through the process, who's his mentor, who's somebody he's looked up to, like as an aspiring NFL player to make it from Canada into the NFL. Who is someone that he looks up to and tries to fashion his game after? He said Penei Sewell. So this guy is massive. He's athletic. And I think the writing's on the wall of if he can develop the way they feel they are, got a good possibility. Taylor Decker out, Penei Sewell to left tackle, and Giovanni Manu to right tackle. So it's promising if he can develop the way that you would assume someone with his height, his athleticism, and speed and power can do. And he was running up people's draft boards after that pro day. So that was a really good pickup. Versatility, can play multiple positions on the offensive line. Sione Vaki is the definition of versatility. Yes, he's a safety, and he's a good tackler. Played running back. He returned kicks and punts. He even at pro day took reps at wide receiver. I think he's going to be like a Swiss Army. He's going to do everything. Like, I don't see him breaking into like the backfield as in like reps because of how deep our backfield is. But somebody to bring in an offense and split them wide to kind of, you know, divert. And someone's got to pay attention to him that might free up a Jahmyr Gibbs or a Sam Laporta to help get open. I think he could be very valuable on this team. Mekhi Wingo, defensive lineman. He's 290-ish pounds, so he's small for a defensive tackle. And he moved around at LSU. So he's going to have the ability to play inside, play outside. And what does Brad Holmes love? Guys who can do that. Look at their defensive line already. You know, Josh Pascoe can play inside and outside. Wingo, I'm sure, is going to be called on to do both. You know, and a healthy James Houston, Marcus Davenport returns to being healthy. Like before he got hurt last year with Minnesota, he had like six or seven tackles or sacks. And he played really good in New England or New Orleans his first couple of years when Dan Campbell and Aaron Quinn were there. So, like, I think. Not taking a defensive tackle early didn't really hurt them because of the versatility they have there. And Christian Mahogany, he hasn't let up a sack since 2021. And I think the reason why he fell was there was a knee injury that he had back in 2021 when he returned and then haven't let up a sack since. And I know that ACLs can kind of make teams leery, but this is like the Dan Campbell guy, where he's, I think Holmes described him as being a dirt bag, because he's just he gets in there, he gets in the trenches, and for an interior lineman to not let up a sack in 3 or 2 years, 2.5 seasons of playing, that's pretty good. And I think with him, they're looking in the future because Kevin Zeitler is 34 years old. He signed a 1 year deal to play right tackle. Or right guard. You know, when you're getting into your mid 30s, probably even early 30s, it's difficult to justify giving a big contract when you're in your mid 30s to an offensive line. Just because I know a lot of them can play a long time, but you don't give them a long-term deal. That's when these guys like Zettler got a 1 year deal. This is when you're going to start seeing 1, 2 year deals for these linemen when they hit those mid 30s. So, what if Ragnow gets hurt this year? He contemplated retirement. Glasgow might end up playing center. And I think Christian Mahogany would be a good choice or an option to step into a guard position this year if needed, if Ragnow would.
And to not give up a sack in the ACC, that's some pretty fucking good stats right there. You got the Hurricanes, Georgia Tech, Florida State. There's a lot of good talented teams.
Undefeated Florida State. I mean, not saying that he guards Jared Verse, but there's a lot of good defensive linemen in the SEC. And to do that, and I just think that could give you another, maybe a better option than you had last year when Jonah Jackson went down, to come in and play guard if needed and could eventually become a staple on that offensive line in the interior and guard. So I'm excited. Like, he went after people who were versatile, but they all filled needs. They didn't do any luxury picks. I don't feel they did any luxury picks. It's like, you know what? Let's just take him. All the guys that could have the potential to contribute. And Mekhi Legal and Christian Mahogany, they had second and third round grades in the draft. So to get both of those guys in the sixth round, that is some good value. And again, like we said, let Brad cook. This is what Brad Holmes is known for. The third round and beyond, third to sixth round, getting guys who maybe fell. Because look, we saw this in the first year. We had to run on offensive players. I called six quarterbacks going in the top 15. It was top 12, but I was close. So we had all the run on the offensive players, the offensive linemen, the wide receivers. The first defensive player didn't go until pick 15 when the Colts took Latu, the defensive end. That was the first defensive player taken. And I want to say it was something like 21 to 10, 22 to 10 with defensive players and offensive players. Like, it was twice as many offensive players go is what I'm trying to say in the first round. So you had a lot of these guys falling because of just how the draft fell, you know, and there was some reaches, I think, and I know there's one that you want that we're really going to talk about. Not necessarily a player, but where they were taken, where they got reaches. But you can't go wrong when Brad Holmes was out of the draft with what he did.
No, not at all. Like I said, I definitely give this draft class an A+. Obviously, time will tell how it turns out. You know, I really like Arnold. I have a gut feeling that down the line, Giovanni Manu could be the steal of this draft. He could be the steal of this draft and turn out to be the biggest star. I mean, only time will tell if he can project it to turn out the way that it goes. I don't know too much about the CFL or him or them British Columbia teams up there. Not too familiar with that, but I just got a good feeling about him just by his stats. You know, I'm real excited for this season. And as Dad mentioned, there was a surprise pick. Well, I think I would definitely consider it the ultimate surprise pick of this draft. Was it number 8 when Atlanta went and took Michael Penix Jr., quarterback out of Washington, when not – about 3 months ago, they just signed Kirk Cousins to a $180 million deal. Something you don't really see done at all, really. I want to say too often, but at all, is you sign a starting quarterback and then draft one 3 months or however late it was. I did not see that one coming. Did not think it was going to come. I totally thought that was where our first defensive player would have been picked. But no, they went out and pulled a curveball on everybody, drafted Penix Jr. I'm not saying it's a bad pick, but it definitely, how we said last week, ruffled some feathers in the clubhouse, as if the Lions would have took a wide receiver or, you know, a new starting traded up for Joe Alt or something like that, you know. Kirk Cousins was definitely not happy with that. To me, it definitely shows they really don't trust him. I mean, yes, Cousins has a pretty big history of injuries, whether it be Washington, Minnesota, but still, to give a guy $180 million, tell him he's going to be the starter, and then draft the future right there. It just, talent-wise, it's not the same, but what's happening is the Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers saga all over again. As in, Brett was the starter, they drafted the upcomer, he's not going to do shit to help him, he's on his own. But we'll see what happens. We will see what happens. Because I believe Kirk stuck there for at least 4 years. They're paying him out. I think option five is the year they can opt out of the contract.
So, this is no disrespect. Michael Penix is very good. I thought he was going 13 to Vegas. So, I didn't have him going that much lower than what he did. This is no – he's top 10 talent. I mean, look.
Definitely.
He took his team to the national championship game. I mean, he's no slouch. I mean, he's good. And he was very good at Indiana when he played at University of Indiana, too. When he had nothing around him, he was really good. It's the fact of, and to me, this falls on the general manager. And what I mean by that is you start evaluating talent and you get a good idea of, well, if this player, this is our guy, especially, you know, with quarterback, there was a need at quarterback. And Desmond Ritter, Taylor Heineke, those weren't the answers. There was a need at quarterback. And at first, the name that was thrown around was Justin Fields. That would have made more sense. He's
totally
towards the end of his first contract. You could have had him in Penix. Maybe you play Fields, and then Penix takes over, and then you just move on from Justin Fields. But I'm sorry, but usually about October, especially if it's a big-time position like that, okay, this is our guy. Here's who we're focusing in on, zoning in on Michael Penix. You don't sign a guy like Kirk Cousins, and you make Kirk Cousins feel like he was the top of the world. You made Kirk Cousins feel like he was the best quarterback ever to play the game. You gave him $180 million. I want to say $130 million of it was guaranteed. I want to say, I looked at the contract. I think it was a 4-year deal, and I think after the third year you can get it.
Okay.
Maybe it is after the fourth. But the point I'm getting at, too, is Michael Penix, after 4 years, is going to be like 29 years old. So now you went through, let's say you go through 4 years of Kirk Cousins, and then you bring in Michael Penix. You're picking up a fifth-year option on a 29-year-old guy who hasn't played him. You know, that's it's not his age, but it's sitting him 4 years and him being almost 30, and you're going to give him his fifth-year option, and then a big contract without really seeing what he's going to do. If you focused in on Michael Penix Jr., why did you sign Kirk Cousins? That makes no sense. I know it's a different – and like you said, talent-wise, it's different. Kirk Cousins, after the initial shock, was like, you know, I'm excited to work with him. But the difference is – this team, this organization, they have no loyalty to Kirk Cousins. One, they just brought him in. And two, this clearly shows it. Before he takes the snap as the quarterback of Atlanta, they've drafted his replacement. So because of that, and Penix being on a rookie deal, you could see potentially this not ending well between Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta Falcons. And I know this was like the storybook ending, his wife's from the Atlanta area, and they're moving home. You know, they've uprooted their kids, who's been in Minnesota, 6 years? Kids started school in Minnesota. They've uprooted them. They've moved to Atlanta area, put the kids in school, and now he don't know, is his job as secure as he thought? Like, I think he was saying, oh, they trade Ritter. Taylor Heineke's my backup. Taylor Heineke was the one, hey, you need to look at, when he was in Washington, hey, don't play me the last game of the year. You need to look at Sam Howell and see what you got in your future. That was going to be Kirk's back. Okay, Taylor Heineke is young enough to where something happened to me. He could come in and, on a short-term basis, play wouldn't fall off, but my job's not in jeopardy. That's what Kirk had. He had complete job security and loved. It's his wife's happy. She's going home. And now, what if Kirk starts off slow or Kirk gets hurt? Michael Penix is a guy who I think everybody agrees could come in and play year one if he was drafted somewhere in a situation where he was going to be the starter. Maybe more like a J.J. McCarthy, where Sam Howell's or Sam Darnold's going to start at some point this year. We assume JJ's going to take over Minnesota. If you went to that kind of a situation, you know, that could have been Vegas. Gardner Minshew starting. At some point this year, you know, we start seeing Michael Penix transition in if you went to Vegas. That's that player is where, you know, let's get him acclimated, but then we're going to get him out there sooner than later, but give him a little bit of time to sit back. But what if something happens and Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles? He's not quite the alien that Aaron Rodgers is to be able to recover in such a short time from an Achilles. So what if there's and he's had injuries. You know, you said it. He had injuries in Washington. He had injuries in Minnesota. But now this 4-year deal with 180 something million doesn't look so secure for Kirk Cousins. And how do you think that makes him feel now? He said he's going to be there for. I think it's more the situation with Aaron Rodgers and not the fact that Aaron Rodgers was a 2-time MVP, AFC or NFC Championship, and then they draft somebody. That was electric. We know, and Green Bay has been known to probably move on from somebody a year or two before you probably need to. Just so they're ahead of the game and getting Jordan Love. But at first, you didn't know how Rodgers would mentor Jordan Love. Like, there was that. There was that, you know, that friction that everybody thought was going to be. Aaron Rodgers ended up being the team player in that sense, being there for Jordan Love, mentoring him. Maybe it took a little bit of time before he started mentoring Jordan Love. But they ended up with a good relationship at the time that the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers relationship. I don't know if that was the same outcome between Atlanta and Kirk Cousins. And if Kirk Cousins plays 2 years and then there's a breakup, now he's 2 years old. Is someone going to take that contract off? Or is he going to have to sit behind Penix and not play and then end up being a journeyman where he goes here 1 year, goes here 1 year, go here 1 year if he wants to continue to play just because he's getting up there in age. And no one want to give him a longer-term commitment. I think that's where it's the sticky situation. This is definitely a negative for Kirk Cousins. And I know people in general saying, oh, that was so stupid taking Michael Penix. It has nothing to do with Penix. He is phenomenal, you know, runner-up to the national championship. It's the situation. You give a guy $180 million, but then something changed from just a month and a half ago till now that you've decided Michael Penix is your guy. I don't have much faith in that general man. To pay somebody that kind of money, bona fide starting quarterback in the NFL, Kirk Cousins, and then rock the boat like how we talked about last week. Detroit not rock the boat with bringing in somebody that could cause some friction. You rock the boat just a month and a half later. But Terry Fontenot's also the same guy who went to ownership and boycotted against Bill Belichick being the next coach. No disrespect to Raheem Morris, but I think this move showed that not hiring Bill Belichick as the head coach and him having some power in the front office was a mistake. Either Kirk Cousins would have been signed and Kirk Cousins would have been Bill Belichick's quarterback, or Michael Penix would have been his quarterback and they wouldn't have signed Kirk Cousins. That's my worry if I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, is this general manager kind of reminds me of a Martin Mayhew or a, you know, situation that we've had in the past before. We've got, you know, who's the last general manager that came from the Patriots? Who we thought was going to be great, but then he just shit the bed when he was here and just kept doing things that made us scratch our head.
Oh, what was his name?
It's that bad that we can't remember his name. It was the guy that hired Matt Patricia and him, Patricia. But that's, if I was an Atlanta Falcon fan, I wouldn't have much faith in Terry Fontenot, the general man. He's already talked the front office into a decision that probably wasn't best for the organization, passing on the GOAT head coach, who was 15 wins away from being the winningest coach in NFL history. No disrespect to Raheem Morris. And then do what you did to Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix. This has also been a negative impact on Penix because people saying it was a dumb pick. He might take that as he's not worthy of a top 10 pick. It could hurt his confidence. Kirk Cousins and him don't have the best relationship. That could hurt Penix's confidence. And we all know in the NFL, talent pays into it, but it's right place, right time, right situation. We've talked about it before. Joe Montana probably wouldn't be Joe Montana if he didn't go to San Francisco. Tom Brady might not have been Tom Brady if he didn't start in New England. So it's as much to do with talent as it does with the situation that you're put in. This isn't the best situation for Michael Penix. Where you look on the other side of it, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May are in really good situation. That's why I scratch my head over Michael Penix going.
Could they trade Penix? Can you do that with your first-round draft? Could you just trade him really fast?
I mean, they could, but then it looks like a complete, utter failure on your organization to allow that pick to go in and then turn around and trade him. That's the laughing stock of the league. If it was a situation where, in the past, where like Eli Manning said, I'm not playing for the Chargers drafted him because they knew they could trade him and get value from him. That happened on draft night.
Yeah.
That's a different situation. You drafted your future with not having a franchise quarterback already in place to then trade them to get what you think is going to be talent. Or no, it was Ryan. Was it Ryan Leaf not wanting to go to
– No,
it was Eli not,
it was Eli not wanting to go to the Chargers, and they swapped with Philip Rivers.
So, yeah, it's that's a different situation. Atlanta would be the laughing stock of the league if now they turn around and trade him back. The move would be – you move on from Kirk Cousins however you can and go to Penix. You can't trade Penix to stay with Kirk Cousins. You can't say, oh, my bad, we fucked up. And we fucked up with our 8th overall pick, or top 10 pick. You know, you're laughing stock of the league. You look incompetent if you.
And it's rookie money too, but that's still a lot of money to be putting down on a number 8 pick.
He's top 10, so I know that they showed salary. I know, and I only know this because they were talking about Denver. Denver's playing Russell Wilson. They picked up Zach Wilson's contract for this year. They're not making the Jets pay. They got Jarrett Stidham, and they showed all their – and then they drafted Bo Nix. Well, they showed the salaries that Denver's got tied up in a quarterback. At 12, Bo Nix makes like $3.25 million. So if he's making $3.25 million and he's 12, you would assume 4 picks higher, Michael Penix is making somewhere closer to $4 million being in the top 10. You know,
yeah,
so,
easily I would say that.
So you're paying quite a bit out. I don't know what they signed Taylor Heineke to. I didn't look at him, but like
basically, you got a lot of money tied up in your starter and your backup, regardless of whichever one it is, Kirk
and
or Penix.
And there's friction.
It's going to make for a very interesting and fun NFL season. That's what we get to look forward to now is a couple more signings and free agencies and training camps starting here in – I think 5 months, 4 months, something like that.
Right.
And with that, we'll go ahead and do our ad read.
One last thing I do want to mention about the draft is with undrafted free agents, it's always just sign some people, throw them against the wall, and hope someone sticks. Someone sticks enough to where they can go on a practice squad and then you can develop them. There was two guys at the Lions – signed as undrafted free agents that they gave guaranteed money to, which means they gave them a signing bonus that was guaranteed that they're making something this next season. They signed center out of UCLA, Duke Clemens. He got a $60,000 signed bonus. Now, $60,000 isn't nothing in the grand scheme of things in the NFL, but for an undrafted free agent, he's athletic. He's 302 pounds. He started at center for 3 seasons. He's got 34 games. Before that, he played right guard, so he does have some versatility. And they say that he's good in the short area for quickness and can pull and track. You're assuming $60,000. You're hoping that you throw those guys against the wall. He kind of sticks to where he's at least going to be on the practice squad and they get development. The other one's a little more interesting. Wide receiver out of Illinois, Isaiah Williams, he got a $240,000 signing bonus for Detroit. That's the largest one Detroit has given out here. He started at Illinois as a quarterback. He switched to wide receiver after 2 seasons, so he's only played a couple years at receiver. He emerged as a slot receiver and a punt return. He is small. He's 5'9", but he's quick. They describe him as quicker than fast. He's good at avoiding the first tackler, so he can even though he's small, he can take hits. And he was Illinois' team captain for the last 2 years. I think that is someone at $240,000. You're hoping that he's either making the practice squad or he's competing with someone like Antoine Green, Donovan Peoples-Jones, for one of those last wide receiver spots on the roster. He's small, but looks like he can be valuable on special teams. So look out for those two names, guys, to at least you're going to hope they're making the practice squad because you gave them guaranteed money. And they're going to cost you something if you don't keep them. So those are the two names that I did want to mention. Center, that's definitely something that is a possibility for us sooner than later to develop. If Ragnall plays now, you can move Graham Glasgow there, but you might need someone to come in, and we know that offensive linemen can go in the 5th, 6th, 7th round and go undrafted and be very valuable and good in NFL players. So those two names to watch out for when it comes to the Lions and their undrafted free agents. And I know they signed Michigan's kicker too, but I still think Jake Bates from the Panthers is getting signed and he'll be the starter come next season.
Yeah, with giving them unrestricted free agent draft picks, guaranteed money, it's definitely saying that they expect them to be doing something. So I'm definitely intrigued to see what happens with them. Maybe that wide receiver becomes our punt returner. You never know. We'll see what happens. As always, in Holmes we trust. And with that, I guess we'll go and kick off the ad read.
For anything Pro Us and Edge, you can find us on all social media platforms at PWBPod. We have our merch store at Brainbuster Tees. Go check out the merch store. And then also check out Nine Planets Comics and Collectibles. They are on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. And you can find them at 20702 Van Born Road in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. 313-724-6482, nineplanetshome.com. Stop in there and see Ben and the crew and tell them that PWE sent you.
And with that, a bid you adieu. Peace, we out of here.